it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
This is my chance to turn the microphone on before I say this is my favorite part of the week. Because if you work with a three-time Super Bowl champion, linebacker, defensive guy, expert, analyst, it's nice to either be validated with some of the opinions you may have expressed on the Six Rings post-game show or on Monday, or there's also the possibility you get some holes poked in some of your thoughts, theories, and opinions on the Patriots. So that's the opportunity we have now because Ted Johnson has been percolating for 48 hours now on the Patriots and that victory down in Miami, and he's going to share what he's going to share his key points and observations, and we know what time that is.
It's time for a TED Talk.
In a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
This was a disappointing play. Patriots had momentum.
From three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
This guy is one of the best inside linebackers in football.
It's like playing hide-and-go-seek with the football. The snap of the ball, said hi.
On WEEI Afternoons.
And you know you're a big deal when you got a sponsor. And TED Talk is brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. If joint pain has you riding the bench, do what Ted did. Eliminate your joint pain with Dr. Franke of Boston's Prolotherapy. Online at bostonprolotherapy.com. Ted Johnson, what'd they do for you?
Boston Prolotherapy, let me tell you something. If you have any joint pain issues, call Dr. Al Franke. He is awesome. His office is in Medford. He's one of the greatest guys. He's a former physician. He knows what he's doing, and he will get you fixed up. And if he can't, he will tell you that in your free consultation, and he will tell you where you need to go. So going to Boston Prolotherapy will be the best decision you make if you got any kind of joint pain.
Yes, Dan Ball.
I tell you what, I'm not sure, Ted, you would have been able to handle those small seats at Fenway without a little joint help from your doctor.
love Fenway. There's not a better park to just watch a game except for the seating itself is not my favorite.
Well, I've always wondered why they don't offer a certain section or certain seats where they're maybe a little bigger.
For the big guys.
Squeeze in a big seat, and then everybody else around them gets the normal seat. Like, we all were fine. We're little fellas.
That stadium was built in, like, 1903 or something.
Oh, yeah, it's 120 years old.
Were people just shorter then?
Yes, they were.
Did they not have tall people then?
No, the people were. We've grown
significantly. Because every house built at that time has got the mirrors are like you got to squat down to look in the mirror.
I need a time machine. Go back.
Doorways were lower.
Yeah.
Oh no, all I was going to say was doorways were lower, Ted. And yes, we as a people were much smaller. And I would even say, even though I'm sure they wouldn't do it, but I wonder if you guys would be into the same way that they've taken seats out of movie theaters and added like the luxury seats that roll back, like because they're making it a premium experience. Why not gut some of those tiny chairs and put in some luxury seating?
Like
you could jack the price up.
I like that.
Oh, so the price is going to go up from what it is now already? I'm not sure, Joe Average.
Wouldn't you like a real seat, though? My God, Andy, I'm 6'2". My knees kill me when I go to Fenway.
I am 5'9". I was fine. Actually, I was a little tight. There was this weird bar that was digging into, like, under my arm and my lat. And I'm like, even I'm not that big, and I'm having issues here. So, yes, we're off track here. Yep. Let's get to the Patriots. A big win in Miami, Ted Johnson. You know how hard that is to do. What was the first thing that jumped off of the game tape for you in terms of getting that job done?
Probably the offense, obviously. The offense, and not only the play of Drake May, but specifically the game plan that was called for Drake May. I just thought it was a really interesting offensive game plan. We talked about all last week is, man, you got to put plays in there that maximize the skill set of your quarterback. You know, there's just not a lot of athletic plays. There wasn't a lot of imagination in that week one. And boy, did Josh McDaniels hear everybody bitching and complaining because it was a totally different game plan I'm not used to seeing Josh McDaniels run.
How so?
It was a very, very kind of Shanahan-esque type of game plan. Oh. If you notice, there was a lot of boots. They had three boot plays in the first quarter.
I liked it.
Love the boot because do you see how comfortable he is running? You will never see Tom Brady do a boot play. It would look clunky. It just wouldn't look good, right? But when you see Drake May, the smooth athlete that he is, it is just so effective and so impactful. Now, you got to be effective running the ball off of it. But the point I'm trying to make is there was a lot of Kyle Shanahan type philosophies in that game plan where it was a lot of boots and then wide zones and wide zone cutbacks off of the boot that is interesting to me. And what you have to think of is the coaching staff. If you remember this coaching staff on offense, there are guys that have multiple experiences in different systems
yep.
other than obviously the Josh McDaniels system. And one is the passing game coordinator, who's also the tight ends coach, Thomas Brown, who mm-hmm. comes from the Sean McVay tree, which is a root of the Kyle Shanahan tree.
Yep.
There was a lot of plays in there. If you're watching the Patriots, you would almost think you're watching the Rams or the 49ers. I think Thomas Brown had a huge impact in, and I want to give credit to Phil Perry. He was the one that first brought that up to my attention, and I thought it was an excellent point. So I loved that style. I just think if we can implement and incorporate more of that style into this offense, I think it's going to go a long way.
Yeah, there was a point I wanted to make there, Ted. And when you said the name Shanahan, you basically connected with me on this point. Who Drake May reminded me of Sunday on those boots, which I thought were executed beautifully, and I love watching him when he's running in space like that. It reminded me of Jake Plummer.
Jake the Snake, yeah, a little
Jake
bit.
Jake the Snake, who obviously executed that offense very well yeah. and did some of the best naked boots in football.
Let's just highlight one play. Two plays that incorporate what I'm talking about. The Matt Collins touchdown.
Yeah.
The Matt Collins touchdown was a touchdown that you saw the Rams do against the Patriots last year. Like, just, I mean, did you see the Rams last year against the Patriots held the ball for less than 20 minutes? They had 19 minutes of possession, but they were surgical when they did get the ball. And they were getting guys open where the defenders are out leveraged. They do a good job of kind of designing plays to get receivers in an area where it's out leveraging the defender. And that was that Matt Collins play. It was a bootleg to the right, and the defender was on the inside, and Matt Collins broke out, and he had that little piece of kind of space to work with there, right by the pylon touchdown. There was just a regular boot where everybody was covered. So what did he do? He just tucked the ball down and ran 5 yards and then darted out of bounds. So instead of, you know, second and 8 or second and 10, it's now second and 5. The ability for him to run, you have a dual threat quarterback, boots to me should be in your arsenal. Now, you got to be good at running the ball so that they bite on the run so that the boot's effective. But I thought that was great. I loved that they ran the ball as effectively as they did. And it wasn't just zones, you know, just direct reads up in the middle. It was a lot of wide zone, get the defense running, and then cut back, make them work hard trying to defend the run. They had 19 rush attempts in the first half. They had 18 rush attempts in week one for the whole game. So, love that.
So the offense, the game plan was good right out the gates. The defense had more of an impact late. What were your thoughts on the defensive game plan and impact on this win?
Well, I liked the game plan. I did.
Okay.
They just didn't execute. If you saw the Dolphins play the Colts in week one, you saw the Colts play pretty much zone. And that's what the Patriots did. They were blitz heavy, man-to-man heavy in week one against the Raiders. In this game, they hardly blitzed at all, and they were playing in a lot of zone. But they just didn't execute it correctly. They couldn't get pressure with four-man rush in the first three quarters. The pressure rate was like less than 20% in that first three quarters. And then all hell broke loose in the fourth quarter. That's when their pressure rate went up almost 40 points in the fourth quarter. You had a Harold Landry third down sack in the fourth quarter. You had Marte Mapu's interception in the fourth quarter. You had Milton Williams on fourth down, that sack. Was also in the fourth quarter. So the defense, as bad as it kind of played for most of the game, when it really counted, they stepped up. I'm trying to figure out, like, so we had a new defensive coordinator in this game.
Yep.
Was that a philosophical change because he was calling the plays, or was it a specific game plan change because it was the Miami Dolphins? That's the question I have.
And that's something we won't – they're not going to tell us, obviously, and we won't know until we start to piece it together. We may not know because if Terrell Williams comes back, then it'll be back to Terrell Williams' defense. If he doesn't, how many weeks do you get with Core? So I think that's part of it. The Milton Williams thing I wanted to make note of because one of the questions we had – Milton Williams had never played 50% of the snaps. What's going to happen when you ask him to play more snaps? He played, I believe, 69% of the snaps in this game and nice. Had a sack on the final play of the game. Yeah. So he didn't wear down. Yeah. If anything, his greatest impact came on the final snap of the day. So I think that's a good sign for those with concerns.
You know,
Milton
Williams kind of sneakily, quietly having a very good start to his Patriots career. Christian Barmore, not so much.
And the defensive front, I was actually, it's weird. I think they ended, you felt good about them. In the beginning, you didn't feel as great because, Fitzy, one of the things we talked about all week was how bad the Miami offensive line was, and you should be able to take advantage of that and dominate them and pressure and this and that. And I didn't feel like that was the way the early portion of the game unfolded. Like, you had this grand mismatch, and Milton Williams and Barmore and these guys were just eating this inept offensive line alive. That didn't really come to fruition early.
No, it did not, especially considering that the right side of the line was brand new and they were calling in depth from all over the league and signing guys like Cole Strange off the Browns practice squad. We thought, to use one of Ted's favorite words, that the Pats defensive front would feast. But in fact, it was quite the opposite till late in the game. Now, maybe that was more to do with the heat and the conditions out there because it was hot, you know, humidity, real feel, 100 degrees. Those are pretty intense conditions.
We will continue with the TED Talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons. We need to get to the running backs, the wide receivers, a couple other aspects of both offense and defense from a Patriots victory in Miami as seen through the eyes of Ted Johnson. That's next on WEEI Afternoons.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
TED Talk rolling along here on WEEI Afternoons. We need to get to the offensive production, not named Drake May, Ted Johnson. There's been a lot of talk of running backs this summer and wide receivers. And I think this game was very interesting. But what were your takes on the production you got from those two position groups?
Yeah. So the running backs clearly, I think, are starting to show you that they are the best position group on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It's only three guys.
Yes,
it's only three. You know. Obviously, Ramondre Stevenson, and and Henderson, and then Gibson, and you, all three were impactful. Henderson had a rough day. Let's not back to back penalties on special teams. He gave up a sack. Yeesh, not good. But he had some nice catches out of the backfield. I kind of forgot, and I don't. You guys remember Ramondre Stevenson led the team in receptions,
69 catches a couple years ago.
Nice. I didn't remember that, and that someone brought that to my attention.
People do forget, and they shouldn't.
They do. And so I will say this: so the time of when the ball went into the hands of Drake May to the time it left his hands was the fastest it's ever been for him, and it was the third fastest release time of any quarterback in week two. So if the ball's coming out fast, chances are it's probably going to running backs, right? Or slant routes, that kind of thing. And so I'm not surprised based on what happened in week one where he looked jittery. He was – the longer he stands back there, the worse it is for fundamentals, I think, with him. I just think his internal clock gets sped up. I'm holding the ball too long. Where do I go? Oh, crap, here they come. And you see his fundamentals off. But when the ball comes out fast and he's decisive, it's almost like – Josh made his reads very simple. Okay, it's going to be a simple little read. That pass to Ramondre on third down, that 55 yarder, that was a design run. And we did this play on the breakdown, Phil Perry and I, last night, NBC Sports Boston. And it was just to talk about that play. It's a play that kind of everyone's talking about. Is DeMario Douglas it was a 2x2 set, and he motioned to make it a 3x1 set. So when he motions over and he sees the defender, who was a cornerback, run with him. What does that tell Drake May?
Man.
It's now man-to-man. We know man-to-man. And so what did they do? They go, okay, now it's man-to-man. Now we're going to work the backside of the formation, which it was an offset back to Ramondre Stevenson and then Kayshawn Booty on that side. And they did like a two-man game. So you have two guys covering those two guys on the backside. And basically, you saw Kayshawn Booty rub or pick the guy covering Ramondre Stevenson just enough, just to get in his way enough, so that it made it a harder cover and that so Ramondre could get by him and get a little separation. And that was an easy read. He was wide open and for a big gain. So it's you can see the brain working. You can see what they're trying to do. I was so I didn't mind in that game that they were so heavy with the running backs. Three of the top four pass catchers in that game were not wide receivers.
Correct.
They were tight ends and they were running backs.
Is that sustainable? You know, we talked about imbalance last week, pass first run. This week the imbalance is your wide receivers, other than touchdowns, because we do need to remember Mac Hollins, touchdown, and Kayshawn Booty with a beautiful touchdown catch. Other than touchdowns, the volume of the passing game went through the running backs. Is that sustainable? Is that just because they are the best position on the team?
I think it's not sustainable.
Okay.
I don't think you can do that every single week. Definitely not. And so I think it's a game plan you can put in there every now and again. And you hope it's not a game plan to settle the quarterback down. You hope it's a game plan to exploit maybe what Miami does. I'm not so sure. But another interesting thing I thought was just the lack of plays that one DeMario Douglas, that was a guy that you and I have been talking about, his lack of production in the week one. Well, he only played, 15% of the plays? Let me see here. I think he played... Yeah, he played 25% of the plays. 15 plays,
yep, 15
25%.
Raw snaps, yep.
You saw Austin Hooper 62%, and you saw Hunter Henry 85%. It was a 12 personnel type game. So they loved to have two tight ends, two wide receivers. That was their primary kind of personnel. And so was it just a one off because of who they were playing, game plan thing, or are they slowly phasing DeMario Douglas out? That's something to keep an eye on.
We're going to mix in the TED Talk with a phone call here that's going to lead us to our next point. Let's go to David in North Providence. What's up, David?
Yes, how are you doing today?
Good.
I got a quick question for Ted. Ted, you play linebacker. Basically, Spillane, do you think this guy is, like, missing abundance of tackles because he's too small for the position? I mean, I just want to get your opinion on what's going on with this guy. He's missing a lot of tackles.
Thanks for the call, David.
It's not because he's too small.
What is it then?
It's a couple things, and this is interesting, right? So let's talk about the missed tackles first, and then we'll talk about the he missed his coverage on that. Devon Achane touchdown. Okay, but let's talk about
he tackled grass on that one.
So here's what you're seeing a lot is that these linebackers they like smaller linebackers. They're very athletic, very fast, very quick, and they drop them into pass coverage. Deep. And then when teams dump the ball off, it's basically one-on-one in this big open space. And so there's more opportunities for him to miss the tackle. What I'm seeing Robert do is try and make the big hit, try and get that gain to, like, just 3 yards. But what he's doing is he's missing, and now they're getting 8 and 10 yard gains as opposed to 3. So it's his technique and how he's approaching the ball carrier in the open field. And then it might be also a scheme problem as well. And to give you an example of that Devon Achane touchdown, he had a man-to-man.
Yeah.
Just him, man-to-man. He's one of the best players on that team is that running back. What we used to do when you have a good running back like that they like to use in third down situations and critical situations is we would double team him. It would be me and Bruschi. And if the running back went to my side, I took him, and Teddy dropped in the hole. If he went to Teddy's side, Teddy took him, and then I dropped in the hole.
Hmm.
Why don't we do something like that? Why don't we double team and give help to Robert Spillane at least for a few weeks until teams stop kind of exploiting that part of the defense?
Real quick on the missed tackles. This has been a major point of contention. A lot of Patriots fans. Numbers out there that Spillane and Christian Ellis are both in the top of the league in missed tackles. Mm-hmm. Is any of that just... It's early in the year. They haven't hit a lot. They're going to naturally get better. reps.
That's what I think. You know, the thing that worries me more, I feel that way. I do. When he's out there as much as he is, you know, you're going to miss a tackle or two, right?
Yeah.
There were some that looked worse than others, right? I get that. But a lot of it's just technique is a big part of it. But that to me is something that he should get cleaned up. I mean, the guy's been a tackle monster his whole career. What concerns me the most about Robert Spillane sometimes is his reads on the run. He vacates gaps. He, you know, where the play is designed to go to a certain gap, and he's going to a different gap. I don't like where his reads are right now in fitting up against the run. That's my biggest concern.
Last but not least, I need your reaction to the penalties, because there were a boatload of penalties, 12 of them, bunch of yards. And then I heard Mike Vrabel on the Greg Hill Show sort of downplay the importance or the issue of penalties. What did you think with the penalties?
Not sure about that. That one was a head-scratcher with me. Mike, that for him to say that, it's a little bit surprising, because it reflects an operation that isn't buttoned up. And it also, what was the big thing that he was going to do was root out the entitlement?
Yeah.
So if you're rooting out the entitlement, you're basically establishing a culture of accountability.
Yeah.
Is there any accountability held to these guys that are getting multiple? I mean, you had right tackle had multiple infractions. You had Travion Henderson had multiple. Does their playing time decrease? Is there a hyper? You want to get guys to focus on doing their job better. Take away their playing time. See what happens. So I'm curious if any of these guys get, basically get reprimanded for their sloppiness in these games with the penalties. I don't think they will. And that worries me, because then that if there's no consequence for the penalties, then you're setting yourself up for failure later.
Thank you for inviting me to your TED Talk. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
Ted Johnson. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we get to the main character from the win on Sunday in Miami, Drake May. Ted Johnson has always been a defender and a supporter of Drake May. What did he think of the best game of Drake May's career? That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.